Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss. We're going to talk a little football in the next half hour or so, and we'll talk some sports writer problems too. Logan, how are you, man?
It's jet lag is what this feels like. I never want to experience this anymore. It was a tough weekend of travel for me. I know we both were on the road this past weekend, and to put it in perspective, folks, I had a 24-hour head start of Parrish, and he beat me home over the weekend. That's how rough it was. It took me 31 hours to get from my hotel room in Utah to my home here in Starkville.
Well, Logan, I had some delays on my trip to Arkansas, but those were voluntary. You know, I did something that I had not done before. My wife was with me on this trip, and we pulled off the road and went to the Devil's Den State Park there, just below Fayetteville, and enjoyed the outdoors and walked some trails and did those things and had a good time doing that. You know, I had a late game, not as late as yours, but ended up getting back to a Hampton Inn in Clarksville at about 2 a.m. on Sunday. And then we got up and finished the rest of the way. Hey, folks, I want you guys to hear a little bit about Logan's terrible, no good, very bad day or days. Coming back from Pro Talk. And we'll hit that in a little bit. Before we do, want to remind you about some podcasts you need to be on the lookout for. See if you can search and find The Memo, our news podcast from the Daily Journal, all things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's coming to you 3 times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And on Wednesdays, check out Prep Rally, all things high school sports, with Brad Locke, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. And we'll be back here with you every Thursday with Double Coverage. Folks, I try not – Logan, I had a boss, my first boss in newspaper many years ago, said, Parrish, don't go to the game and complain about your seat in a column because nobody cares. They don't care about what hurdles you face, or they don't care about how difficult your job is, and so that's just not good copy, so don't come back and write that. So I've always remembered that, those words of wisdom from Tom Morris at the Ouachita Citizen in West Monroe, Louisiana. But some things, Logan, are just a little bit extreme. And one of the things they teach you in journalism class is that extreme and unusual, those are news qualities. Those are things that that make news. And I think when you, number one, start a football game at almost 9:30 Central Time and carry on over with it until the wee hours of Saturday morning and don't leave the work area until what time? About 3 a.m?
I think that was about right. I went back to the hotel and did most of my work. I actually closed my laptop and went to bed at 6 a.m. Saturday morning. Yeah. And I had an 8 o'clock wake-up call to get to the airport, so I ended up getting about 2 hours of sleep before I started this this long journey that I
right. But at least you went to bed in Provo knowing that after you just woke up and got yourself to the airport that you could then get on the plane and just relax and close your eyes and sleep on the plane a little bit while the good people of United Airlines got you safely back to Jackson, so you could drive on into Starkville. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, of course, I got to the airport early. I'm one of those people. I'm not a, in Paris, you know, that I'm not a somebody that arrives places early most of the time. But you know, airports, I feel like I have an obligation to get there about 2 hours before my flight leaves. So I was there, ready to go, turn my rental car in, and was sitting in the terminal just waiting on my flight. And it was 3 hours late. I was supposed to have a 3-hour layover in Chicago. And, you know, I got to the airport in Provo, or in Salt Lake City, excuse me, and just sat there for, you know, 5 or 6 hours. and was finally able to board a flight to Chicago. That was where, you know, the layover was. That's where I was going to catch the connecting flight. And when I landed in Chicago, it was 7:04, and my flight to Jackson started boarding at 7:05 on the complete opposite end of the airport. So I, as soon as I hit the runway in Chicago, I had 1 minute to actually start boarding my flight. So needless to say, I was sitting on the last seat of the airplane too. So once I finally got off the airplane, ran across the entire O'Hare Airport to get to my gate, I saw the plane pulling away from the gate. So, and that was the last flight out to Jackson for the night. So, they put me up in a hotel. And, you know, that really wasn't that bad. You know, got room service that night and, you know, finally got some food in me and, spent the night in Chicago. They put me on the first flight out in the morning, Jackson. And, so I got up and, was going to get in the shower before I started my next day of travel and turned the handle of the shower and got a little trickle that came out of the shower. So my shower didn't work. So I ended up having to bathe in the sink and wash my hair in the sink. And I took Uber from the hotel to the airport, and you know, Uber was there at 5:45, and had a nice experience with that, and got there, going to catch my 8 o'clock flight out, and that 8 o'clock flight ended up leaving about 11:30 because I had three more delays the next day. So finally, I was able to get back to Starkville about 3 o'clock the next day. So 31 hours of travel. But from the time I left my hotel in Draper, Utah, before the time I put the key into the lock here in Starkville. So I was pretty tired.
Were you able to answer one of those little United Airlines surveys about how are we doing? Did you get one of those that you were able to fill out?
I didn't. They probably conveniently, they may have checked my Twitter and saw what kind of day of travel I was having and conveniently left me off of that list. So, I know, you know, I was trying to update everybody. I was angry Saturday, you know, with all the delays, but by the time I got to Sunday and all the things that had happened to me, it kind of just became comical to me. So I let everybody in on my running joke on Twitter, and, you know, people seemed like they enjoyed it. Some people probably didn't, but, you know, some people don't enjoy a lot of things. So they want me to just basically give them sports and that's it. But, you know, life happens. I mean, it's not, you know, you talked about earlier, you know, nobody cares really about things that happen to sports writers behind the scenes, but, you know, this could have happened to anybody. I mean, everybody's had travel troubles, and, you know, this was mine.
Well, I am grateful that I have not had that bad of an airline experience before, where I've had to be put up for a night. You know, I'll tell you, there are just places in the SEC that are difficult to get to, and you know, and then you add to that the expense of the special event rate for a football game. And, you know, many times you find yourself staying outside the city, and that makes getting in and out for the game a challenge and everything. But, you know, it's just it's what we do, and it's what, like you said, a lot of people deal with it. We'll shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about these football games. It was, you know, not a good weekend for either of the local teams. Mississippi State losing in overtime at BYU, and Ole Miss not playing well. Really, these receivers we've talked about a lot. Just had a bad game, had some drops, and there are a lot of other reasons that Ole Miss did not win the football game at Arkansas. But the receivers come to mind because they've been so good and so deep and talented and so consistent this season that when they drop a pass, it's like, oh, my gosh, look at that. And that happened several times against Arkansas, and it caused the Ole Miss offense to be out of sync. They were rarely able to be in rhythm, and when they're not, you know, when they're running that tempo offense and Chad Kelly is dropping back a few steps, throwing some accurate balls, and those receivers making those catches, that offense goes pretty quickly. That's the way it's designed, and Ole Miss runs that tempo effectively much of the time. When they jump in there, they're usually pretty good at it. That was not the case against Arkansas. We're going to talk about that game a little bit more as well. Logan, let's talk about State and BYU. Now, the Bulldogs were coming off that really just debacle at home against Auburn, 38 to 14 when they really didn't play well in the first half, let that game get away from them and turn into a rout. And I told you last week that I expected State would be competitive, that they would play better, that they would be embarrassed and would want to play well. And I guess just from the score, I didn't see much of the game. I woke up and saw that it was 14-14 and thought, oh, this game must be in the third quarter. And then I looked at the clock, and it was, after midnight, and I looked at the bottom of the screen and it said overtime. So how did State play in the game?
Well, they played better, for one thing. I mean, they didn't play great, but they played better than they had. It was probably their second best effort of the season. You know, I think their best game was probably against South Carolina in week two, but they played better against BYU. They jumped out, had a lead 14-7 at halftime. Had some chances to win that game. You know, two plays could have decided that game. If the State makes one of those two plays, you know, they win that ball game. BYU, they stopped BYU late in the fourth quarter on third down, and which would have set up probably a field goal opportunity for BYU. And State gets a legal hands, or he gets a personal foul roughing the quarterback on third down. So they had the third down stop. It was an incompletion. And then Will Coleman, who was playing in his first game of the season, goes in and just gets an extra little lick on the quarterback. Nothing really major. And they throw a 15-yard penalty, you know, automatic first down, first and goal, and BYU ends up scoring a touchdown, whereas, you know, they would have probably had to kick a field goal in that situation. And that's what tied the game, was on that play, as a result of that play. And then you go to the first overtime. Mississippi State goes down, puts 7 points up on the board. They get a strip, and the ball's laying right there on the ground. And next thing you know, a BYU offensive lineman scoops it up and runs it nearly for a touchdown. So if all State has to do is jump on that ball in overtime and they win, but they don't. And, BYU ends up tying it up on a touchdown after they recover the fumble, and they score on the first play of the second overtime, and, Mississippi State can't score, and State had a chance to score in that second overtime. And Nick Fitzgerald threw a perfect ball to Fred Ross on the first play of the second overtime, and he just drops it in the end zone. He couldn't have laid it in there more perfectly, but he dropped it. And, it was an incredible atmosphere out there, Parrish. I know you've been out there, you know, years ago, but, the view from the press box, and, it was a packed stadium out there. It was a really great atmosphere to watch college football in there. But, like I said, Mississippi State played well, just didn't play well enough. And, it's just another one of situations where, you know, they've got, you know, a handful of plays that could have, you know, totally changed the outcome of their season, but they haven't made those plays in these close games yet. And I guess it's just some of those growing pains for a young football team.
Well, did they have Sprite in the press box? No caffeine, right?
There was no caffeine whatsoever. And, you know, when you're used to playing that late at night. I mean, you know, I'm a night owl anyway, Perry.
I know, man. I needed caffeine.
I still needed caffeine, and there were none to be had. I mean, they had caffeine-free Diet Coke. They even had caffeine-free root beer up there, which is something I don't think I've ever seen. But, yeah, lots of, you know, pink lemonade, and just with no caffeine, no coffee, nothing. I mean, you were kind of just on your own, and it was a rough night.
What does when I went out there with State in 2000, I believe that stadium was seating about 55,000, maybe 60,000. What does it look like now? What's capacity there at LaBelle Edwards Stadium?
I want to say it was 64 something. It was it was pretty close to that. It was probably 62, 60. Let's see. I'm looking at the attendance right now. 62,184 was the official attendance for that ball game. So It was an incredible atmosphere. You know, it was totally different. One thing I thought was neat, Parrish, was Mississippi State's band didn't make the trip. And before the game, the BYU band played the Mississippi State fight song before the game. So I thought that was pretty neat. That's something you really don't see a whole lot these days.
Well, I saw that. I saw some Twitter traffic for that just right as it was happening there. The other thing that stood out for me when I covered State and BYU there in 2000 was that Mississippi State was so much faster than BYU in that game. What was the speed of these teams like this season?
Well, they've got an incredible running back.
kid's name is Jamal Williams. I mean, he's a legit running back. I mean, he was very impressive. He could have easily suited up for any SEC team and got some playing time out there. And then Taysom Hill is a fifth-year senior quarterback for BYU. He was originally committed to Stanford at one point, so he's a legit prospect, and he's had some injuries over his career. But if that guy was worse because of the injuries, I would have hated to seen him when he was healthy, because that guy could play some football, made smart decisions. He knew when to tuck the ball and run it and make plays with his feet. You know, when plays broke down, State don't got one sack in the entire ball game, and that was the last play of regulation. He was trying to create as much time to throw a Hail Mary as he could. State finally got to him, stripped the ball, and even that play, the ball bounced, and A.J. Jefferson had a chance to kind of scoop and score on the very last play of the game, and that could have changed the outcome of the ball game, but didn't happen. And but yeah, I mean, they were legit. You know, they had a good offensive line, pretty good defense. They were a pretty good opponent.
Well, shifting gears here, looking at Ole Miss, we talked about the Rebels and the fact that they were just not really in sync with their passing game against Arkansas. And you could see that on the first drive, a rare drop from Evan Ingram, and that kind of halted that drive or made that drive difficult. Ingram would go on to finish with 7 catches for 111 yards and a touchdown. So he kind of overcame that, but there were just too many other drops along the way. Chad Kelly finishing 18 for 39. Rare to see him complete under 50%, and he would not have completed under 50 this time had there been a little more rhythm in that passing game. 253 yards, 1 interception, in which he did underthrow the receiver in the middle of the field, downfield, Van Jefferson. And you could tell Kelly was just trying to finesse the ball there, really trying to get it right to Jefferson, whereas if he throws it out there another yard or two, maybe Jefferson can go get it. But he threw the interception there, also had a touchdown. He was big in the run game, 14 carries, 89 yards, a couple of touchdowns, scored on a 17-yard run, a really nice run when he cut back against the grain and found the open field there. But the run game, you need to take some pressure off Chad Kelly, and the Rebels just aren't doing that consistently enough. Chad Kelly, or your quarterback in the run game, Logan, that ought to be that something extra. You know, I know you've seen this a lot with State, and probably are seeing some of it right now with you've seen it before with Dak, and I know that Nick Fitzgerald's doing some of this now. It's a lot of pressure on the quarterback when he's the leading rusher too. And you don't see that a whole lot with Kelly in this offense, but you do see it some, and he is a big part of the run game. And if they could run the ball more consistently, they could take that kind of pressure off Chad Kelly. They weren't able to do that against Arkansas. 150 yards in the run game overall for Ole Miss. Akeem Judd gets 11 carries, 41 yards. He did have a nice touchdown run, a 2-yard run off the left side where he had contact at the 1-yard line, really a big collision, but he wins it, moves forward into the end zone and scores, but just not enough in the run game. Too many runs of 3 yards or less for Judd and Eugene Brasley, and we never did see the freshman Devon Penniman. May see him this week against LSU. He's been nursing a hamstring injury. He did dress out for the game and was on the roster, but did not play against Arkansas, but that's one thing. So they've struggled to run the ball, but the other part of the run game for Ole Miss has been stopping the run, and that's been even more a struggle for the Rebels. They go into this week last in the SEC in run defense and ranked really number 108, 104 in the nation. At 212.8 yards allowed. Let me correct myself here. They are number 12 in the conference. So that would have been last in the SEC before expansion. 12th in the conference, 104th in the country in run defense at 202.8 yards per game. Arkansas, which is not a great running team, as they often are. Many years, you think of the Hogs and you think of those tailbacks and you think of depth and talent at the position. That's not their makeup this year. They run for 200, and it just, they were able to possess the ball and keep the ball away. from Ole Miss. Now, that being said, there were a couple of times in the second half where Ole Miss was able to get some stops, not always before Arkansas chewed up some time and yardage, but the Rebels were able to give the ball back to their offense a couple of times where Ole Miss had a chance to assert itself offensively, you know, extend a three-point lead, and the Rebels just were not able to do that. That's a concern for this matchup moving forward against LSU. Not only will the Tigers get back Leonard Fournette, who was a Heisman contender at the beginning of the season before injuries set him back a little bit and caused him to miss several games. Fournette is back in action this week against Ole Miss. But there's also Darius Guy. So, and when you watch this guy, he's the leading rusher for the Tigers right now and one of the fastest backs to reach 1,000 yards for his career in LSU history. So it's two quality backs. Arkansas really was just about Raleigh Williams, a good back, but not an All-American, although he looked like one against the Rebels. 180 yards, 27 carries, en route to SEC Player of the Week honors this week. So, you know, for Ole Miss moving ahead, Logan, it's going to be about the offense. And we have seen such explosiveness from this offense this season. The larger body of work for Ole Miss, even though the Rebels are 3-3, says that they can perform in the passing game and that they can score points. I think the drops by the receivers that we saw against Arkansas was an aberration. That's not who they are. If it becomes who they are, then this team has real problems, because if it's going to score, if it's going to win some games the rest of the way, it's going to be because it outscores opponents. And Ole Miss, if the passing game is clicking and is in rhythm, has a great chance to outscore LSU and win the game. But if there are drops and inconsistencies within the offense like that, and then you throw in too many 3- and 2-yard runs, Ole Miss is not going to win in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I didn't get to see much of that game, Pierce. I think I saw maybe the last 2 or 3 plays of the game once I finally got to the hotel there in Chicago, and they were, Arkansas was pretty much wrapping things up in that one. But how much did Arkansas go to the tight end? Because, I mean, that's something that they killed Mississippi State with a year ago. And I know that, you know, they don't have Hunter Henry this year, but they still have Jeremy Sprinkle, and he's kind of a threat in the passing game. And really did a lot of damage to State last year. And I know Ole Miss had some struggles with the, you know, covering the tight end a year ago as well. How much was that involved in Arkansas?
You know, I really expected them to go to Jeremy Sprinkle more, and they didn't. He had one catch for 5 yards. He was effective. He was effective for Arkansas last year in Oxford, as was Hunter Henry. So they seem to be targeting those tight ends more last year. But honestly, the Arkansas offense that I saw looked in a lot of ways like the Ole Miss offense that I've seen much this year. Not this heavy reliance on tempo. And, you know, there were a lot of times, most of the time, Austin Allen was up under center, that sort of thing. And, you know, they do play with a fullback. But I mean in terms of efficiency in the passing game, protection for Austin Allen, that was pretty good. That had been an issue for Arkansas. But the way Allen spread around the balls to his receivers, and they were talented receivers, Drew Morgan, a possession guy, 4 catches, Dominique Reed, 3 of them, one being a 51-yard touchdown, Jared Cornelius, Keon Hatcher, 3 catches each. So Austin Allen was spreading around the ball well, managing the offense well, and you know those are attributes that I've seen in the Ole Miss offense but did not see as much against Arkansas. Arkansas had the better offense on the field in that game, and they won the game 34-30. But that being said, you know, even as late as 2 minutes, you know, there was Ole Miss with a chance to drive down and win the game with a touchdown. But, you know, they get a sack early in that possession. Arkansas had 3 sacks. One of them was with pressure up the middle on that last possession, and that set the Rebels back. All of a sudden, you've got Kelly facing a 4th and 14, and he runs for, you know, most of it. He gets like within a yard or two of the sticks, and they knock him down. He fumbles out of bounds, and they take possession and run out the clock. So, you know, it was not Ole Miss's best game. They don't typically play their best game in Fayetteville. This was better than 2 years ago when they went up there in the cold and rain and lost 30 to nothing. But it's still, you've got to be in sync. You got to play better to win the game. This year they were competitive, but that's not the goal for this team. And, they struggle in Fayetteville for whatever reason. They've played 13 times in Fayetteville, and they are 2-11 there.
Yeah, Mississippi State struggled up there as well. In fact, I think their win last year may have been their first in Fayetteville ever. And, of course, they had to block a field goal there at the end of the game to win that. When the Arkansas will be coming to Starkville this year, they'll play again later next month. But this weekend, Mississippi State travels up to Kentucky, another road game for the Bulldogs, pretty far road game, but it's somewhere they're used to playing. Kentucky is Mississippi State's constant from the east. And Dan Mullen's had success against Kentucky, 7-0. He's never lost the Wildcats. And he's had some of his better rushing games against the Wildcats. I know his first year, Anthony Dixon set the single-game school record in that ball game. I think in the 7 ball games, he's had a 100-yard rusher in 5 of those 7 games. So they've had some unbelievable rushing performances. And Dak Prescott ran for 100 yards, over 100 yards against the Wildcats here in Starkville last year. And this year, I really don't know how things are going to go, because their starting running back, Brandon Holloway, is probably going to miss this game. He missed the BYU game, didn't travel to that one. Dan Mullen didn't feel good about his chances to play this week as well with an injury. Kevon Coleman, senior free safety, missed the BYU game. He's probably going to miss this game as well. And then you look at Deion Calhoun, the right guard, goes down in the first half against BYU last week. He has a high ankle sprain on his left foot, and he's probably going to miss this game as well. So Mississippi State could be going up to Kentucky this week without 3 starters. And they're going to get young from that point on. A lot of inexperience filling in those spots. But, at the same time, you look at a Kentucky team, and it's really sort of been a head-scratcher right now. They're 3-3, 2-2 in the SEC. Their 2 SEC wins are against South Carolina and Vanderbilt, and they won by a touchdown each in those games. The advantage Kentucky does have is they had a week off going into this ball game, so they've had an extra week to prepare for the Bulldogs and got a chance to get healthy. And Mississippi State's coming off a long road trip. State didn't actually practice until Monday, even though they played on a Friday. They didn't get back till 6 a.m. Saturday morning, took the rest of the weekend off, and then resumed practices on Monday. So State may have a little bit of jet lag like I'm experiencing right now, Parrish, but another long road trip ahead. And Mississippi State needs, because we've talked about how brutal their schedule is during the month of November. They really need these next 2 ball games against Kentucky and Samford to kind of break even and at least give themselves a chance in that final month to pull a couple of upsets and get bowl eligible.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Hey, be sure to check out our news podcast, The Memo, 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. And also our high school sports podcast, Prep Rally, that's coming to you every Wednesday with Brad Locke, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. And Logan and I will be back with you next week for another edition of Double Coverage.